At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Bamature Hour. It is Wednesday, May 7th in the year of our Lord, and we're going to have a Bamature Hour roundtable discussion with, we've got Dr. T, we've got Will K, we've got producer Scott, and we're going to talk about who are the 10 best football coaches in the SEC. Welcome everybody. Will K, how are you today?
Doing well.
Dr. T?
Doing great.
Producer Scott?
My stock response for 6 out of 7 days is, I'm doing.
Well, let's do it then. If you're doing, let's do it. Okay, guys, we're going to go through the SEC coaches. I'm going to just do a quick highlight summary. Since there's 16 SEC football coaches, these are the six that I'm leaving out of the top 10. I'm just going to quickly highlight those. We'll go back through them here in a minute. But I'm leaving Mike Elko from Texas A&M out of my top 10. I'm leaving Billy Napier from Florida out of the top 10. I'm leaving Clark Lee with Vanderbilt out of the top 10. I'm leaving Brent Venables from Oklahoma out of the top 10. Leaving Sam Pittman at Arkansas out of the top 10. And last and least, I'm leaving Jeff Lebby from Mississippi State out of the top 10. Here are my rankings from 10 to 1. Of the coaches, and then we'll go through the six I left out, and then we'll go through the top 10 and talk about if there's anybody I left out of the top 10, who should be in the top 10 and why, and then where I'm wrong on my top 10, and we'll debate that. So number 10 in the top 10, I've got Mark Stoops at Kentucky. Number 9, I've got Hugh Freeze at Auburn. Number 8, I've got Eli Drinkwitz of Missouri. Number 7, Shane Beamer, South Carolina. Number 6 is Josh Heupel, Tennessee. Number 5, Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss. Number 4, Brian Kelly, LSU. Drum roll. Number 3, Kalen DeBoer, Alabama. Number 2, Steve Sarkisian at Texas. And yes, number 1, shocker, Kirby Smart at the University of Georgia. We'll delve into the top 10 here in a minute. Okay, guys, from the six that I left out of the top 10, Mike Elko, Billy Napier, Clark Lee, Brent Venables, Sam Pittman, Jeff Lebby, do you think any of those six should be in the top 10? And if so, which one and why?
I think I would argue Clark Lee could be in the top 10. To go 7-6 at Vanderbilt is pretty remarkable. And he obviously has the least amount of talent probably in the SEC, arguably the least amount of talent. And we know what he did to us last year. And 7-6 at Vanderbilt, I could argue him being in the top 10 for sure.
Okay. Will K, any of those six do you think ought to be in the top 10 that I left out?
Clark Lee was good and he beat Alabama, but it's hard to be in the top 10 in the SEC, so I'm not going to say him, but probably Mike Elko. I mean, I know they lost their last 4 or 5, but first year and before they lost to Texas and Auburn, they had a real shot at the playoff and SEC championship. Marcel Reed is really good. Another year with him, I think that this next year that they could make a playoff run. So I'll say Mike Elko.
Okay, and we're going to talk about both of those here in a minute. Producer Scott, any of the six I left out that you think ought to be in the top 10?
Beyond the shadow of a doubt, and I'm going to tell you who they must replace.
Okay.
I have Mike Elko at number 9, and okay. I'm not going to go into so much detail about why I chose these two, but the two I would boot, and then I had Billy Napier.
Okay.
And how on God's green earth, when you look at Auburn, the pedigree, the reputation, what they've done in the past, the last 3 years, they finished 14, ninth and 14th in the league, and Kentucky finished ninth, eighth, and now whoop, dropped to 15th, and they went and scooped up a reject from lowly NC State as a quarterback. What were they thinking? So those that Jordan Leary blew at NC State. He got booted by two backups, and they go scoop him up and do this big special on TV about him. I said, yeah, their season's finished, and they finished 15th. So to me, those two guys are gone.
Okay.
Four by attrition, Mike and Billy slide up and take their spots.
All right. Let's talk about Clark Lee first. And I love Vanderbilt. I'm a Vanderbilt fan. To me, one upside season does not make him a top 10 coach in this really tough league yet. I want to see him prove it again this year. So I left him out because I'm like, okay, did he get lucky? He brought in an OC. He brought in, was it New Mexico State?
Right.
Where he got the upside surprise in a quarterback. And is this a fluke or can he back it up? So I really wanted him to see, do it more than 1 year. So I left Clark Lee out for that reason. Any thoughts on whether fluky season, got lucky, got a great transfer quarterback in, and can he back it up? Or so that was my reasoning behind leaving Clark Lee out.
Well, John, I have to interject. Okay, I'm gonna argue for my guy. Okay,
please.
So here he is. You have, according to Rivals, I know there are a lot of recruiting rankings out there, but according to Rivals, he had the 51st best recruiting class in 24. That's including transfer portal. And then in 2025, I know this is yet to be determined, but he's in the 78th range. So he's dealing with a lot less talent than the rest of the conference. And to win seven, I mean, I know it wasn't all – those seven wins aren't all SEC wins, but to go 7-6 in the SEC, or at least being a part of the SEC, I'm not sure what his SEC schedule record was last year. Do y'all remember that off the top of your head?
Yeah, I'm going to pull that up right now. Keep talking while
I'm anyway, so that. Yeah, I just think, hey, you're dealing with a lot less talent and you're beating teams with much more talent. Yeah, part of that is he kind of caught lightning in a bottle with that quarterback and caught us off guard after we, had a great win over Georgia. But I just think if you can do it there, he could probably do it with some 5 stars and do a pretty good job. So that's why I have him at 10, just because I think he has the least amount of talent and has done much more with less. So
three and five in the SEC, by the way.
That's great.
he was tied for 11th in the SEC, but that marquee win over Alabama, unbelievable. Beat Kentucky. I can't remember who the third win was, but they had a great season. I was pleasantly surprised. He ruined Alabama's season, knocked them out of the playoffs. So kudos. I just felt like I want to see him do it more than 1 year.
Yeah, I understand.
Anybody else have any comments on Clark Lee before we move on to Mike Elko?
I real quick, John, I had him at number 11, so I'm kind of favoring Dr.
Come on,
T
come
here.
On, producer Scott. Come on, Scott.
I mean, if you share some of that money with me, I may move him up. We can talk about it off air.
Maybe.
All right, so let's talk about Mike Elko. For Mike Elko, I want to see him prove it another year. I felt like he took over a loaded roster that Jimbo Fisher had recruited. Jimbo Fisher did not coach up his teams and did not have the success. But year after year, Texas A&M had a great roster. So from that standpoint, I felt like he inherited a loaded roster with lots of Texas talent, with that Texas A&M money. So, and I felt like his success at Duke was in a weak ACC. So I'm not giving him credit for having coached at the highest level. He did have success at Duke, but I just didn't feel that it was worthy of cracking the top 10 here. I want to see Mike Elko prove it another year in the SEC. I want to see him keep Texas A&M in that upper half of the SEC. And then I'm willing to give him credit. So that was my reasoning for keeping him out of the top 10. Somebody fire away at why I'm wrong.
Well, with that logic, why is Kalen DeBoer so high on your list?
Boom. Talk to him, Will.
We will get to that.
You're going to get pounded over that. That's embarrassing. But anyway, go ahead. Okay, I'll step in and just say I made a note here. Yeah, that's really embarrassing, especially from a game show host like you. Did Mike Elko, did I write this down correctly? Did they beat Florida, Missouri, and LSU?
I don't have their wins. I don't have who they beat, but they were 8-4.
Well, they did. And if you again, just go into the two guys above, you've got to slide Elko and Napier above those two stooges. So that's where I stand.
Okay. Whew. All right. There we go.
Shots fired, John. Shots fired.
Anybody else on the Mike Elko bandwagon?
Not yet.
I mean, I'm not on the bandwagon. I think that of the coaches in the SEC, he's probably in the top 10. Who are you going to put? Who's that guy from Oklahoma? What's his name? Venables.
Brett Venables. I've got him not in the top 10. I've got him down. So he's not included. So I don't have Venables above Elko.
It's about the coaches, not the outcome of the team. You know.
Yeah, so that leads to a good question, Will. I have a question for you guys. When you rank top 10 coaches, are you ranking it on the coach? Or are you ranking it on history? I guess a little bit of everything. But because, I mean, I don't know. I just look at it and think, hey, who are the actually best coaches? Not necessarily who has – and I guess it includes everything, like who recruits the best, who coaches the best. But, like, I mean, you could argue, like I said earlier, I'm going to argue for my man Clark Lee again. If Clark Lee's at Georgia, they're probably really, really good. They're probably really, really good. And then all of a sudden you think Clark Lee's a great coach. And I don't know. I just think I think Kirby Smart's a great coach, but Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach, but he hasn't done it yet in the SEC. But I don't know. I just think how much of your rating is on history, and how much of it is on the players. And I guess I'm kind of talking myself in circles here, thinking about it. But but I don't know. It's tough because I think, like they said, Mike Elko is probably a good bit better than Hugh Freeze at this point and Mark Stoops, you know? So, John, what are you thinking having Hugh Freeze at 9? Come on, man.
Okay. And we're going to get to Hugh Freeze, but to your point, I think it's how good of a coach are they in terms of coaching up players, getting the most out of players. But you got to keep recruiting in mind and managing the whole program and just making it all successful. So I think it's all those things, because Saban wasn't successful just because he could coach up players. He could recruit like crazy. He knew how to run a program. He knew how to keep the train on the track and get where he wanted to go. And so, you know, that's a reason why I'm going to have Kirby Smart at the top of this list. Is Kirby's the whole package. He learned from the best. He went in there. He capitalized, because Nick Saban was not winning national championships at Michigan State.
Right.
He learned how to coach, but then he went to LSU and capitalized on all the strengths of that LSU program, and he won a natty. And I'm going to say that, you know, the second natty LSU won after he left, I credit it to him, because he left that cupboard full of players. And then as soon as he goes to Alabama, he overtakes LSU and leaves LSU in the dust. So I think it's the whole package. So that was my point, is I think it's the whole package. But I'm going to look at their history of, have they been coaching for a while, and how have they done at multiple programs if they have a history as well. So we'll talk more about that. But yes, I think it's all of those things. So that's kind of the way I look at it from Clark Lee and Elko, is I don't think they've proven that they can build a national championship caliber program and win big and compete for a natty.
So, okay.
So, and then let's get to Billy Napier. Why did I leave him off? I thought he had a terrible start to the season, and I thought he finished strong. So I want to see, can he do it for a full year, and can he get Florida back up to that 8-4, 9-3, 10-2 level, because Florida has built-in advantages for recruiting and money and history, and it's a big-time program, and Florida should not be in the bottom half of the SEC. Florida should be ahead of the Arkansas and the Oklahomas and the Vanderbilts and all of that. And really, you know, should be up there with Tennessee or ahead of Tennessee. And I just felt like he hasn't proven that he can bring them back to that upper echelon level yet, but he certainly finished strong. And we can talk about Lane Kiffin in a little bit, but he put a nail in the coffin on Lane Kiffin's bid to make the playoffs. And that was a marquee win for them. But again, half of the season and a strong finish to the season, to me, does not make Billy Napier a top 10 SEC coach yet. But I thought he was going to get fired 6 games into the season. I thought he's done. And who's Florida going to go higher? And next thing you know, he finishes strong and he's there another year. So I'm not ready to put Napier in there. And that's my thinking. So guys, argue the other way for Billy Napier and why I'm wrong.
Florida had the hardest schedule in all of college football last year. That's one thing to keep in mind. I forgot who they beat and who they lost to, but I was looking at their schedule before the year, and I was thinking they're going to go 4-8, 5-7, 6-6. What did they end up? 8-4, 9-4?
7-5.
Oh, yeah, 7-5. Yep.
Okay, well, still better than what I thought. So, I mean, they got DJ Lagway coming back.
Yep.
Still a tough schedule. It's about the same as last year, but only lost one more game than Kalen DeBoer did. And you have him at number 3.
Keep firing, Will. Keep firing.
I'm just trying to get through his process of thinking here. So,
well, they got boat raced by Miami, and Miami didn't make the playoffs. So, and they were 4-4 in the SEC. So I need to see more than one year, because the prior years under
Alabama got boat raced by Oklahoma.
They did.
And well, frankly, Vanderbilt kind of.
Ouch.
And John, you said you want to see one more year. Hugh Frozen Freeze, 3 years, 14th finish, 9th finish, then back to 14th in a high pedigree school. He should be number 20 on a list of 16.
Preach it. Scott. Get it, brother.
How did he end up number 9? Anyway. Number 9, love potion number 9 for Hugh Frozen Freeze. I'm sorry. That's if there were a gong show, this would be the time to hit the gong.
Amen.
Amen.
All right. Well, let's delve into the top 10. And I think there's 2 of them that you guys are going to mark out quickly. But number 1, Mark Stoops. I think given Kentucky and the resources they put into basketball versus football, and that Stoops has had a lot of success at Kentucky, not last year, but he's had a lot of success. And the man can coach defense, and the man is a good coach. I put him at 10 because I think he's more of a proven head coach. And I think had Stoops been willing to go to Texas A&M, I think he would have been very successful there. I think Kentucky's not as bad as Vanderbilt, but it's close in terms of football programs that just – have built-in disadvantages. State of Kentucky does not produce high-quality football players in the numbers that Florida does, Texas does, California, etc. So I think given his history of producing very competitive teams at Kentucky for a long period of time, I think he's a really good coach. So I put Stoops at 10 for that reason, because I think he's got a better track record than the guys I left out. But I'm open to hearing you guys take Stoops out and bash him far away.
Okay, I'll start. So I think, first of all, he benefits historically for a pretty good record because he was in the Eastern Conference or division, which was for a long time the easier division, until, and now it's all one big conference. So I think now what he did what this year, he went 1-7. That's just what you're going to start seeing from him, I think. And I think, you know, according to the preseason strength of schedule, they have it at have Kentucky at, you know, 19, which isn't, you know, no, I'm sorry. They have them at eight. So they have them at a hard schedule and he doesn't have a lot of talent and he's not sheltered by the Eastern Division, which isn't that, you know, easy anymore. But the point is he's having to play with the big boys now. And therefore I think he's going to have a mediocre year again. And at some point after several years of mediocrity, we gotta put him where he belongs. And that's the bottom 10, baby, our bottom six. Well, so, I mean, how do you finish the year against Louisville? Maybe 41-14. Ouch. That's a top 10 coach. I don't think so. Boomps.
And I will say this, guys, when you take a job in the SEC, half of these guys are going to get fired every 3 to 4 years. And I think the NIL dollars and all that's going to make the turnover even higher. You're going to get great coaches in this league and they're going to get fired. And it's just a way of life. And I'll agree with you. If Stoops doesn't have a good year, he could be gone. But who are you going to get to take the Kentucky program? It's going to be tough.
It is tough. Yeah, I don't know. But just real quick, I'll take 20 seconds. Looking at next year's schedule for them, I think Ole Miss at Kentucky is probably a loss for Kentucky. At South Carolina, like the fourth game, is probably a loss. At Georgia, probably a loss. Texas at Kentucky, probably a loss. Tennessee at Kentucky, probably a loss. Then at Auburn, probably a loss. Florida at Kentucky, I don't know. I just think I see six losses right out of the gates. So at some point, we got to put him where his record, you know, where he deserves to be, John. And it's not in the top 10, brother.
And that may be due to his lack of ability to recruit. That may be his biggest downfall, because I think the man can coach defense. I'd love to have him as my D coordinator.
Yeah.
I think he knows how to organize a program and run a program. Probably a great special teams coach. I think if we had had him on Alabama's staff last year, Alabama would have been more buttoned up in those areas. That wouldn't have solved the offensive coordinator issues that we had last year, but I think it would have been more buttoned up. But I do think he is on the hot seat and he could be gone. But I'm not sure who is going to be able to recruit at Kentucky. So I wouldn't want to take that job. But anyway, I put him there for those reasons. Producer Scott, you got anything to add?
I mean, I already unloaded on him and Frozen, but I had Stoops at unlucky number 13, and he should feel blessed to be that high. So that's all I got.
All right, let's go to the next one that you all are going to, you know, nail up on a cross and go at him is Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze has not been successful at Auburn. I'm not going to argue that he has. I want to see how he does this year. I think that the cupboard was bare when Harsin was there and he took over Auburn at a really low point, and he has not been able to yet restock it with the kind of players that he was able to bring in at Ole Miss. But I will say Hugh Freeze won at a high level at Ole Miss. He beat Alabama a couple of times. He won at a high level at Liberty, and I believe in him as a coach, and I'm doing it based off of how he did at Ole Miss and Liberty, not how he's done at Auburn. And we'll see this year. I think he's on the hot seat as well. I think if he has a bad year this year, he's going to be gone. And it'd be interesting to see who would be willing to take over at Auburn for him, and can they go get a high-level coach. But I'm basing it strictly on the fact that Hugh Freeze has been highly successful at Ole Miss and at Liberty, and he won big at both places, although had there been NIL money when he was at Ole Miss, maybe he could have kept his job at Ole Miss because he had recruiting violations then. And we're going to see what happens at Auburn. All right, guys, fire away.
All right, I'll step in. I'm going to use my hometown hero, Scott Frost, as an exact shadow replica of what you said. That guy was a stallion when we went undefeated here back in 17 and 18. And what I then say after that disaster at Nebraska, that he's a if we were talking about Big Ten during those years, would I put him in as number 9 in the Big Ten? No. It's what are you doing now at the school with high pedigree? You're doing nothing. You're terrible. So, I hope the guy turns it around. But until he does, you can't rank on nostalgic memories. He clearly hasn't done it at a school that a good coach should be able to come in and turn around. Let's be honest. If Saban had come in November of 2022, do you think they would have ranked 14th, then 9th, then 14th over 3 years in the SEC? No dice.
No, so, sir.
You know, sir. So show it to me next year and I'll give you some street cred. But until then, you're frozen.
Amen, brother. He's preaching hard tonight, John. He's preaching hard.
Coming hard. But I will say, unlike Scott Frost, who only won at Central Florida, he did win big at Ole Miss. So he's done it at two programs, not one. And that's why I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he can still salvage Auburn. But it's proven a lot harder than I thought. And maybe he hasn't adjusted to the new NIL transfer portal as well as I thought he might. We're going to see. So I will grant you that. But we're going to see. All right, let's move on to who I had at number 8, Eli Drinkwitz. Do you guys have any qualms with me ranking Eli at 8?
I don't. Right. I had him at number 7. Go ahead, Will.
See, that sounds about right to me.
So if you look at Drinkwitz and Shane Beamer, I mean, do you feel like they're both about the same level? Because I have Shane Beamer at 7, and I had him there because I feel like he's really got South Carolina on a trajectory to surpass Missouri. I'm impressed with Drinkwitz. He was at App State. He won big there, moved on to Missouri. He's done really well there, although I think they were a little bit of a disappointment this past year. Shane Beamer really impressed me. I thought they should have beaten Alabama here. Alabama really stepped in it and got lucky to beat them. So I think Beamer ball is on the way up with South Carolina. I think Alabama's in real trouble when they go to South Carolina. I don't fear Alabama going to Missouri. Now, they have to go to both of those places. And I'm a lot more worried about South Carolina than Missouri. That is my reason for putting Beamer at 7 and Drinkwitz at 8. Okay, guys, fire away.
I like that, actually. I think that's the first good thing you said tonight, John. I'm just kidding. No, I like Beamer.
Are killing me.
I know. Hey, this is fun. I like this. No, I like Beamer and Drinkwitz at 7 and 8. Yeah.
I actually had Beamer at 5, and you guys can crush me for that, but I'm going to stick with my logic. If you've been here at an established SEC school for 3 years, I looked at the last 3 years, and that would include Drinkwitz and Beamer. And let's be honest, Missouri is a late entry to the league, and they're not going to carry the same power as a lot of these other schools. And when you go from finishing 10th and then to 3rd and then to 4th, that's pretty awesome from a school in the Midwest that probably doesn't even belong in the league. So, John, I agree with all the praise you heaped on Beamer. And, again, I had Drinkwitz at number 7.
Okay. So a little bit of disagreement there, but I think everybody likes Beamer. I think we think Beamer's on the up. And he's got a lot of expectations this year. So if they fall back, it's going to be quite disappointing. And quite honestly, South Carolina, due to some injuries and some bad luck, they had LSU beaten. And LSU got lucky to pull that game out, or Beamer would have made the playoffs. And he was razor thin close. And Rick and I sat there in the stands, Dr. T, and saw Alabama get lucky to beat South Carolina. And South Carolina easily could have gone 11-1 instead of 9-3 and been in the playoffs. And that would have been crazy.
Yeah.
And the quarterback for South Carolina, I mean, he is highly rated. I've seen him projected as a top 10, top 15 draft pick. There's a lot. He's good. He's going to be tough customer. And I'm really nervous about Alabama going into South Carolina and trying to pull that one out. That's going to be tough.
I am too. I do look at this isn't really about ranking coaches, but just looking at South Carolina next year projections, you know, ESPN, the way too early rankings has them, what, like 10, which is pretty high actually for a South Carolina. And the strength of schedule, ESPN has them at, I think, 8 of 7 in the country. So it's going to be a tough year for them either way. But they have a tough schedule, pretty good talent, like top 20 talent, according to the recruiting websites. But I like us going in South Carolina. I think I know that's kind of off subject, but I think we're going to have a great year. We'll get to that later.
We will get to that later, but that's one of those that I'm scared of. I'm scared of that one. I'm scared of Georgia and always scared of going to Auburn. Just weird things happen at Auburn. Mm-hmm. And those three games to me, and we'll get into another, we'll do another round table on the Alabama schedule and what the trap games are and where the landmines are. But South Carolina, I don't know. We just seem to struggle there, and I'm worried about that game. But I'm hoping that my faith in Kalen DeBoer is going to prove out, and he's going to show that he can go win big road games, which to me he has not shown an ability other than going down and shredding LSU to win a big game on the road yet. So yet
and Wisconsin, that was big.
I thought it was at the time. Later, not so much.
Yeah.
When's the last time we lost to South Carolina? We've only played them twice in like the last 15 years. And that was when Alshon Jeffrey decided to play like Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, who's that quarterback? Shane?
Steven Garcia.
Yeah.
Steven Garcia.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marshawn Lattimore and Alshon Jeffrey looked like Adrian Peterson and Calvin Johnson out there.
And who was that? Who was the Tuscaloosa quarterback sitting on the bench while Garcia was lighting him up?
John Parker Wilson.
No.
AJ, let's see, 2010, wasn't it?
No, for South Carolina, Boney.
Smelly.
Yeah, Smelly was sitting there the bench.
Yeah, that's right, Chris Smelly.
Yeah, he's sitting there on the bench watching Garcia light up. And they also had the running back who had the bad knee but was so great in college and blew his knee out.
Lattimore.
Yeah, Lattimore. I mean that was a tough South Carolina Steve Spurrier.
It was Marcus Lattimore, not Marshawn.
Or Marcus Lattimore, yes.
I was thinking of the DB on the Saints.
Yes, yeah. Marcus Lattimore. But I mean that was a big upset. That ruined that national championship team from trying to repeat. So that team was
loaded too. That was a tough loss.
That year was not great, but anyway.
Yeah, let's not revisit that one right now. I don't want to bring this down too much. All right, so after Shane Beamer, I put Josh Heupel at 6. I think he's really done well at Tennessee. He's made him relevant again. He's handed Alabama 2 losses, which were tough to take, ruined 2 Alabama seasons, got into the playoff. Now, they got shredded by Ohio State, wasn't even competitive. And I really thought they had a chance to beat him, and I was dead wrong. But I think Josh Heupel's a good coach. We're going to see how he does after the whole quarterback fiasco with Nico Iamaliava and that whole fiasco and how that turned out. But I had Josh Heupel at 6. All right, guys, fire away.
He needs to get his NIL under control.
That's right. But, John, I have Josh Heupel. I think 6 is okay. I like that spot. I mean, his SEC record over his 5 years is 14-10. That's not stellar, you know. But, I mean, at this point, when you're down to 6 on the list, not everyone can have a great record, of course. But he has a winning percentage, above 500, which is pretty good in this conference. But he's definitely not worthy of the top 3 or 4, I don't believe. Hasn't done anything great. So he had a good year last year, but for Tennessee, that's probably pretty good. For Alabama, making it to the playoffs isn't amazing or anything to really write home about. We're all about championships here. Hoo-ah. Just kidding.
Roll Tide!
Woo! Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I think 6 is reasonable.
Producer Scott, you hadn't weighed in on the Vols, the Orange.
So I both of your logic sounds good. I'm not refuting any of that. The reason I have him at number 4 is I have your golden boy DeBoer, and Brian Kelly moving below him, and we'll get to that. So it's just, No, and by the way, when we're talking about criteria, to me, it's we haven't started the season yet. What have you done lately up to now? Not what I think you're going to do this season, because spoiler alert, I have hopes for DeBoer. I think he's going to be top two or three after this year. So when I'm talking about what happened in the last year to 3 years, that is simply the reason why I moved Josh up to number four, not because I disagree with you all's assessments.
I hear you, but Kalen did go to the national championship game. That's pretty good.
And what'd he do the next year with a better team?
Hey, easy.
He didn't have his quarterback.
He never did pull his quarterback out. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, it's fun. I mean, the quarterback nobody likes, Saban, almost went to the natty with him. So,
hold on, producer Scott. Don't bash Kalen DeBoer just yet. Please save that to when we get to him.
I'm sorry. I'll accept my demerit.
All right, Will K. Any parting shots on Josh Heupel in Tennessee before we move on to Lane Kiffin?
I don't like Josh Heupel, but six is fine, I guess.
I mean, do you think I'm giving him too much credit? You think he's about right?
No, it sounds about right. I wouldn't go any lower or higher.
And I will say this. He wanted Oklahoma where we couldn't beat him in Oklahoma. And that was rough.
Joey Freshwater.
All right, let's move on to the infamous Joey Freshwater. Guys, Lane Kiffin is undeniably an incredible offensive mind. He is a great offensive coach. He's done a great job of making Ole Miss relevant. When Hugh Freeze left, I thought Ole Miss was going into the tank. Lane's made them relevant, but they did choke against Florida. I don't know how the heck they lost to Florida. And they lost to Kentucky. They had Kentucky beat, and really they had a chance to beat LSU. So really, I think Ole Miss – they had a great season, went 9-3, just missed the playoffs, just like South Carolina, just like Alabama. But I really thought he lost three winnable games. He beat Georgia. He beat Georgia and then loses to Kentucky. He goes to Florida and they choked that game against Florida when, if you look at his roster was as good, if not better, and the NIL expenditures they had. It's just like, I don't think Lane Kiffin week in and week out has his team at as high a level as Saban was able to maintain. And that's why, even though I think Lane Kiffin, I'd pick Lane Kiffin over Josh Heupel. I'd pick him over Shane Beamer. I had thoughts about would I rather have him than Kalen DeBoer. And I think the jury's still out on that, but I have Lane Kiffin at five. But I do think he let some games get away because Ole Miss could have had an unbelievable season. How the heck do you lose to Kentucky? I don't know how that happens. That was a big choke job. So
at home, right?
Yes, at home. And I believe LSU was at home as well. I'm not positive about that, but you know, and losing to Florida late in the season when Florida's on the rise, but still. I thought Ole Miss was a better team than Florida, and I can't believe they went down there. And our boy Jackson Dart, who got drafted way ahead of Shador, had a horrible game in the fourth quarter when it was money time. And Lane couldn't dial up the plays, and they couldn't pull that game out. I was shocked. So anyway, I have Lane at five. Fire away.
Yeah, Lane's kind of bounced around from place to place. I just look at him as the coach that he's just always going to be right there, but he never gets there. Like, yeah. I mean, I know Penn State had a better year last year, but, like, in general, I think of Ole Miss and Penn State in the same category, you know, just like 9-3, 8-4 every year. Maybe they'll beat Ohio State or Alabama one year, but they're just always on. They're just always right there, but they never get there. Like with James Franklin's a good comp.
I like it.
Yeah,
I agree. That's kind of what I think of Lane Kiffin. When I think of Lane, I think of him, as Will said. I mean, he'll have a good record every year, but he's going to lose a game he's not supposed to, and he may win a game he's not supposed to, and still he'll end up, you know, 10-2 is probably a ceiling. And, yeah, I just think he kind of, as an offensive coordinator, he's amazing. I think he could have taken this team last year at Alabama with Milroe and done some amazing things with Milroe, like he did with Blake Sims or whoever his quarterback was. I think it was Blake Sims. And I think Milroe could have been amazing with the right OC, like Lane. Lane's an amazing OC. He's an A-plus OC, and he's probably a B head coach.
Producer Scott, comments on Lane, Joey Freshwater?
I think all of your commentary was beautiful. It rolled off your tongues better than I could have imagined. Wow. And I actually agree with it. Again, I have him at number three just because I moved two guys down, and I feel very justified in moving those two guys down. But when we're having this discussion this time next year, I think Lane could very well be number five. So that's why I moved him up. But you guys are all 100% correct.
Well, that's pretty nice of you, Producer Scott.
All right, let's move to who I have as number four. I put Brian Kelly at number four more because of what he did at Notre Dame than what he's been able to do at LSU. I think at LSU, give him credit for beating Alabama. Give him credit for making it to the SEC championship game and you know, for having a Heisman Trophy winner. But his defense has not been what I would have expected out of Brian Kelly, because at Notre Dame, they always had good defenses. He was always relevant at Notre Dame, and he got Notre Dame into the playoff multiple times. Of course, they got stomped by Alabama in the national championship game, but he always had them relevant. So I'm giving him respect for his long track record of being a great coach, not because he's achieved at the level I thought he might be able to achieve at LSU so far. So I've got him at four out of that historical track record, not from recency bias and from what has he done for the last 3 years.
So you're going back 5 years ago?
Wow. Just wow.
Wow.
Let me just break it down for you, Johnny.
Break it down.
Break it down now. You come into, I mean, LSU, come on. LSU, you come in beating your chest for all those reasons you just said. You finish fourth your first year. You finish fifth in the league your second year. Your third year, you finish eighth. How are we looking at 5 years ago? This guy's a dud, man. This guy's done. He's number eight on my list. And did they lose? Did they lose to Florida State once or twice?
Yes.
Twice,
yes.
Florida State. I mean, come on, man. Come on.
2 years in a row.
Come on, man.
They seem to lose the first game of the season, like I think the past several years, haven't they?
Did they lose to USC this year?
They did.
Yeah, they did.
The only bright spot is, I think it's if I'm not mistaken, I went to the bowl game when I think I fell asleep. When they beat Purdue like 65-3 or something, you know, that was like the one shining moment. But there is no excuse. Look at the quarterback he had last year.
Tuscaloosa.
You know, how can we look at Notre Dame, his history there, and then excuse the last 3 years? Hey, if he proves me wrong, well, great. But he's number eight.
Yeah, you have a lot of explaining to do, John. Hey, Lucy, you have a lot of explaining to do.
I'm giving him credit for his long history of being a highly successful, relevant coach. But I agree with you. The last 3 years, the offense has been great. Jaden Daniels has been great. Neusmeyer's been great. But his defense has stunk. And we'll see what he can do this year. And, guys, the SEC is loaded. It is loaded. There is not maybe Mississippi State, maybe Kentucky, but other than those two teams, there is not an easy matchup in this league. It's going to be fun to see. And, you know, this time next year when we do this, you're right. Brian Kelly may be fired for all I know. We'll see.
Wow. Yeah, it's true.
All right, now let's get to the big one.
Drum roll, Russ, drum roll.
Kalen DeBoer is number three. And again, I'm not giving him credit. I thought he underachieved for his first year at Alabama. I thought his offensive coordinator was terrible. I thought they underachieved with Milroe. They misused Milroe. I thought they were undisciplined. There's a lot I can bang on about this team, but I think Kalen DeBoer's history is he wins everywhere. He got to the national championship. Now, granted, Alabama played Michigan much tougher than Washington did, but he went undefeated, and he was winning like crazy at Washington. He won big at Fresno State. He won at the NAI level. I believe three national championships. The guy knows how to coach. He's got his OC back in Ryan Grubb this year. The roster, from everything I'm seeing, and please correct me, Dr. T, if I'm wrong, but we've got a high-level roster with lots of highly rated. He's been able to recruit. He didn't lose many players in the portal. We've reloaded. So I think this Alabama team is primed to win. But, gosh, losing to Vanderbilt, losing at Oklahoma, the Tennessee loss. Okay, Tennessee was good. We're playing in Knoxville. That I can stomach that. But the Vanderbilt loss, inexcusable. Losing to a bad Oklahoma team, we were not prepared for that. That was terrible. So I'm looking at one, really three games where we stunk, and then you can say that South Carolina win that we eked out here, that was a bad game. South Florida, a bad game. There was a lot of things that I'm – and in another episode, we're going to have a round table. We're going to pick apart last year's team. We're going to talk about all those issues that were exposed and can he get them fixed this year. But I still believe in Kalen DeBoer, and I think his history as a winner allows, in my opinion, for him to be in the top three. Okay, guys, fire away.
Where do I begin? I don't think they misused Jalen Milroe. You said that. He had 20 rushing touchdowns, only the fourth SEC quarterback to ever do that. But anyway, he beat Georgia. They almost came back and won, but he did beat Georgia his first year, his first marquee win. He beat the crap out of LSU, and he's the first Alabama coach to beat Auburn in his first year since, I don't even know. I wasn't even alive, I don't think. I think the quarterback situation next year, he might have his guy, more of a pocket passer. He gets his offensive coordinator back, no scholarship players in the portal, gets Ryan Williams back. The defense might be the best in the country next year. That might be an overreaction, but I really like our defense, especially our DBs. But if he doesn't make the playoff this next year, he's in trouble.
Playoffs?
Yeah, I'm talking about the playoffs. Yeah. So that's my spiel on that.
Well done, Will. Well done. I like it. That was well articulated. And you may have left out they also beat Missouri 34-0, right?
Yes.
They okay. did. They also beat South Florida. I mean, you know, Missouri wasn't that great.
Well, I mean, 34-0's big. That's a big win. So
it's
John
on the road.
Yeah, so I this time next year, I'm hopeful he's at 2 or 3, maybe he's at 1.
You watch out. I know that they were terrible last year, but week 1 against Florida State might be a test. At Florida State?
Okay.
I know they were – I mean, they can't be any worse this next year, can they?
No, they can't.
They will be better. And Florida State is a good program. You know.
We're going to find out a whole lot in that game, and I'm excited. I'm ready for it.
On the road at Georgia. On the road at Auburn. We get Tennessee – hey, we get Vanderbilt and Oklahoma at home next year. That's big.
We're going to stomp them here.
Yeah, we're not going to lose to them next year.
So, guys, and Will, I want all you to address this. I have concerns about Kalen DeBoer on the road. We win at home. I have questions about him winning big games on the road.
I don't.
Did you watch the LSU game?
Their defense was terrible, and
but it's LSU on the road.
But their defense was terrible.
It's Death Valley, John.
Texas A&M did the same thing to them we did. Their running quarterback, who went to Montgomery Bell Academy, kudos to that, my high school, he's a running quarterback. He hadn't shown that he can throw the ball, and Milroe's a better version of that, so they got shredded that way. We just matched up really well against that LSU team. Our strengths exposed their weaknesses, and their strengths we were able to negate. So it was just one of those favorable matchups, in my opinion, as to why we stomped them. And Milroe didn't sit back there and screw around in the pocket and hold on to the ball too long and misread. He didn't have to. They were just able to just shove it down their throat. It was a great win. But the Oklahoma game, the Vanderbilt game, how we got beat by Michigan, Tennessee, I just have real concerns about the road. And I want to see him go win some big road games and show that he can do what Nick could do, which is win big games on the road. I'm very concerned.
I think he won the biggest road game last year. I know you just explained that. Maybe Tennessee was bigger, but going to Death Valley, we have struggled with worse LSU teams there with a better quarterback. We did lose to Vanderbilt, but I mean, was that, I don't even know what that was. It kind of felt like a dream. Like I was there. I was like, okay, you know, if they scored, whatever. And then Milroe throws a pick six. I'm like, we're in trouble.
And our third downs, Will, you saw that. Our third down and fourth down on defense, we couldn't get them off the field on third
down.
It's that little
option. That it's almost like a triple option, like RPO offense they run, and we just could not stop it to save our life because he would fake this way. I mean, that's not going to happen next year. We're going to murder Diego Pavia. But
mark it down. He's a mark man.
Yeah, he needs to have an ambulance on standby. I'm just kidding. But, you know, I'm just saying that because they're going to play with a lot of anger next year.
Yeah. I'll say this, John. I think Kalen DeBoer, I think you have him ranked too high right now. But like producer Scott said, I'm very optimistic that next year will be a really good year. I think Kalen, usually his second year is amazing. It was at Washington, and before that it was as well, I believe. His previous school. So I really fully expect this year to be much better. And so we went 9-4 this year. Is that right? 9-4?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think much better. What does that mean? I think it means we're going to be in the playoffs and playing for national championship. I think we'll make it to the final game this year. Here's why I think that before anybody objects. The defense is going to be great. Defense is going to returns a lot of starters, and it's the second year in the system. I think they're going to be really solid. And so I think it's going to be very hard just to beat us out of the gate. When you walk out in the field, we're going to be hard to beat. That's number one. Number two.
Hey, real quick on the defense, and I want to talk. Yeah. I want to break this down in another episode. The one area I'm concerned about in the defense is, do we have the run stuffers up the middle? You know, those 310-pound guys. That's the only area I'm really worried about the defense is, do we have enough big dudes in the middle just to, you know, kill the pocket, stop the run, address that real quick.
No, I think you're right. That's the one area that's probably the question mark. I don't think it'll be bad. I think it'll be, and it probably won't be stellar like Barmore or, you know, those kind of guys. But I think we'll have several decent guys. And so I think our line will be probably, you know, a B to B plus, and I think the rest of the defense will be in the A range. So I think the defense as a whole will be like an A minus. I'm on the grades tonight, guys. I don't know why, but I like to do the grades. So A minus on defense. Offense, I think a quarterback is an upgrade this year with whoever you want, but especially with Ty. And I think the receivers are amazing. The running backs are going to be good. And the offensive line is, I know, again, probably the question mark on offense, but they're going to be decent. So I just think out of the gate, we're going to, like Will said, well, maybe Will was concerned about Florida State. I'm not. But I think we're going to beat Florida State. ULM, Wisconsin, at Georgia is our big test. I think that's we'll know how good we're going to be at Georgia week 4. And But yeah, I think Kalen DeBoer is going to have a great year. I think last year his main issue was he misread the locker room. He misread the team a little bit and felt like he had to go with Milroe all year. And Milroe, again, I know, Will, you might like him a lot, or maybe not, but I think Milroe is not going to get you a national championship. He'll get you 9 to 10 wins, but that's it. So that's my take. I think we're going to have a good year. I think next year I'll have Kalen DeBoer in the top two to three, but right now I'd have him at five.
Ryan Grubb. Huge addition. Huge.
Does he like to eat? Okay.
Yeah, he does. Hey, John, I did see the defensive coordinator tonight at the tennis courts, and he looked like he was pumped up, ready to go. He looked excited about the season. He's in good spirits. I have a good feeling about it.
Is he a good tennis player?
Hey, you know, this is a podcast, and he might hear it. So, hey, listen, he was having
fun.
Yeah,
he is. Yes, he's amazing.
He was having fun. He and his wife having a great time.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I think that Ryan Grubb is a huge addition, and I think the OC last year, that was a weak spot. I don't think that we had a quality OC who knew how to handle and develop Milroe. He needed to be handled. He needed to be coached up in a certain way. And I think he was too much doing the bad things Milroe can do. And he wasn't coached up enough to do the things that he did the prior year. Cause I thought Milroe had a better year in Saban's last year than he did this past year. Thought that was a weakness. And the other thing that I'm going to bash DeBoer about is I thought we were way too undisciplined as a team last year. Too many penalties, too many personal fouls, too many guys not doing their assignment. I thought we blew containment too many times. I thought guys didn't do their job, which Saban would just harp that. Do your job. Don't try to do your job in somebody else's. If everybody does their job, we're going to have a success on every play. And I thought there was too much lack of discipline last year at key times that killed us. So I'm excited to see whether we're able to correct those issues this year. I believe in DeBoer, but I'm going to be really disappointed if we're showing up with those personal fouls, with guys losing containment,
kicking footballs.
Just all of that stuff. So I'm going to be really interested to see that. So, Rick, if you had DeBoer at five, who did you have at three and four?
So I didn't actually have a list laid out. I was making up in my head as I went, but I would have Lane Kiffin above DeBoer, and I would have probably Heupel above DeBoer. So I'd say Lane Kiffin at three and Heupel at four, and then DeBoer at five. But I like the first two. I like Kirby Smart and Steve.
Okay. And so my thought on keeping DeBoer above Brian Kelly, Lane Kiffin, Heupel is I would not trade DeBoer for any of those guys. Maybe Lane Kiffin, but I as the more I thought about it, I'm like, no, he doesn't have the track record that DeBoer does at other places of winning at the highest level and making a national championship game, making the playoffs. So that's why I kept DeBoer above those guys. I'm like, if I could trade, you know, if this was an NFL trade, or if you had the ability, I would not trade DeBoer for Kelly, Kiffin, Heupel, any of those guys.
Okay.
Well, that's your right as an American, John. That is.
That is. Will K., where did you have DeBoer in your ranking?
Three.
All right. So we probably don't have much debate on Sarkisian at two and Kirby Smart at one. Am I right that we all agree? We can talk about them ad nauseum, but do we all think that Sarkisian's two and and Smart's one?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
There's one thing.
Number one is retired Saban.
Well,
that's right. That's right. But hey, John, real quick, since you completely passed on me when I had an excoriating piece on DeBoer, and I think you were scared to hear it, and that's okay.
I want to hear it, please.
No. You guys, I'm seriously, he's going to be top one. He's going to be one, two, or three next year. Everything you said's right, and I've thought that all along. When you say top 10, it's top 10 now. What have you done? You were handed the best program in America, in my opinion, On a silver you went platter. On a platinum platter. You went 9-4 and seventh. Wow, in the conference, and you got beat by Michigan in a bowl game, the Toilet Bowl. That is the worst college football game I've ever seen when you consider the pedigree of those two schools. And Michigan called a Pop Warner set of plays. I mean, NC State could have done better against Michigan. That is embarrassing. So, yeah, I agree with Will. Alabama is going to come out firing this year, and he will be in the top three spots. But it's just a travesty that he's number three on this list.
So where do you have him, producer Scott? You have him at five?
Six.
Six, okay. Six.
Yeah. But again, I think we all agree. We probably all agree on next year's list. But mm-hmm. No way, man. Pop Warner, Michigan. How did you lose that game? Anyway.
Well, I will say that game was completely lost by Jalen Milroe.
He was awful. He was awful.
100%.
Then take him out. Take him out. No, it falls on coaches. It falls on coaches. I hear this, his OC was bad. That is coaching. That if you're going to be number three, Saban would have beaten Michigan by 24 in that game. Mic drop.
Saban wouldn't have been in that game.
Well, right, there you go. But had he been in?
Saban wouldn't have lost at Vanderbilt after beating Georgia. We would not have had that letdown. He would not have lost it. Or if he lost to Oklahoma, it would have been by two or three or something.
I think the only game I could see Saban maybe losing last year was Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
He would have beat Georgia. He would have beat LSU. Definitely would have beat Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. Maybe Tennessee because he already lost there. But, he would have beat South Carolina more by more. Nick Saban just doesn't lose the games that we lost last year. We would have been in the playoff, obviously. But
I know this is not the Saban love hour, but I will say this. I agree, too. I'm like, y'all, after you think
it
about it.
It is the Saban love
he's
hour.
He's the GOAT.
This is the love
hour. Right, we're going to change it from amateur hour to Saban hour.
The GOAT. But,
I think – I look at Saban over 17 years, y'all. It's amazing what he did. When I really look at these other coaches and their records, to do it every single week. I mean, he hardly ever lost a game that he wasn't supposed to win. You know what I mean? I mean, that he's not supposed to lose. And it's amazing. I mean, wow.
There's going to be a few slip-ups here and now. Right. Sometimes.
Well, I think that year after he won his first natty at Alabama, they did lose. That was the year where his team had some letdowns when they shouldn't have. And I think after that, that's why he was on them all the time. He wasn't going to let them let down like that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Scott, to your point, I think Kalen DeBoer underachieved in his first year at Alabama. I think he's got – I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens this year. If he does it again this year, he is going to be on the hot seat. If he coaches and they have the same kind of letdown performances he did in 24 in the 25 season, that seat is going to get really hot for him, and there's going to be people calling him out. But I think right now, I don't expect that. But we'll see.
I have a question, John, and for the team. So Steve Sarkisian, we have him at two, and I think that's where he belongs. But say this year, he has the most money probably to spend on players. He has great facilities. He has great recruits and everything. So this year, say he makes it to the playoff, and that's it, just the playoffs, and doesn't win a national championship. How long can he do that, and we keep putting him at number two? You know what I mean? If he just keeps
think that now that it's a 12-team platform, you can get away with it more because it's harder to win a national championship. I mean, didn't he make the semifinals last year?
I think so.
Two years in a row he's been in the semifinals.
And didn't he play?
At some point, if you don't at least make the final, then maybe. But now that it's 12 teams and it's a lot harder, I think his leash is a little longer.
I think this will flip. Let's say Kalen outperforms him. I think it'll flip. Let Alabama makes the finals and Texas gets the semis or only to the quarters. Then I think it'll flip.
I think it's going to be Alabama and Texas in Atlanta. And we'll find out. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
All right, John, another question, guys. Will and Scott, how many coaches outside of the SEC do you have above Kirby and Steve?
Zero.
Okay. Negative amounts.
Okay.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
Just no Ryan Day. I know he just won the national championship, but he can't beat that team up north. I think he's lost to them four times in a row now. And yeah, that's just not – I mean, that's like Alabama losing to Auburn four times in a row. That's just – you just can't do that.
Well, I'm actually going to disagree, and I'm going to put Ryan Day ahead of Steve Sarkisian because Ryan Day has a natty and Sarkisian doesn't. So until we'll see how Ryan Day does this year. And I'm going to say Jim Harbaugh was a heck of a coach. And, I mean, he just wins everywhere. So I'm not going to
– Well, he's in the NFL now.
I understand that. And I'm going to say that Michigan game – Ryan Day is very lucky that they expanded the playoffs because that would have been inexcusable to lose that game and not win the natty. But I'm gonna keep Ryan Day ahead of Sarkisian until Sarkisian wins the natty.
I agree. I think he has a national championship, so you got to put him above Steve in that regard.
All right, are we gonna do a Kirby love fest, or are we gonna end this discussion and not give Kirby a lot of love? Because
let's not talk about Kirby.
Amateur hour.
He left us. Well, let's just end it on the Nick Saban love.
The last time I saw Kirby, he was at Wayside Restaurant, shoving his face full of big old breakfast, and I'm tired of him.
was it a high cholesterol breakfast? Maybe
it was a big one. Hot cakes, everything, Scott. Everything.
That is. How old is he?
I don't know, but he got that double chin from something.
Yeah, I mean, I could. Yeah, he keeps his chins up when the chips are down. That's because he's younger than I am. I don't know how old he is, but I could. If I ate like that, it'd be like bowling ball stomach for 4 days.
He's probably 50. Bad to guess.
Wow. Yeah. Well, maybe he is going to slide then if he keeps crushing that kind of food. I mean, he didn't have a great year, I mean, you know, by his standards. So
I think he's 48. And I will say this. I thought he coached a terrible game against Notre Dame. They shouldn't have lost that game. I thought that was a terrible coaching job by him. The way they gave away those points at the end of the first half and then let them run, ran a kickoff back in the second half. They should have won that game. All he had to do was just pound the ball and not try to go for those scoring at the end of the game. And then how a Kirby Smart team that's usually very strong on special teams gave up that kickoff return. It's like he could have won that by 3 points, and that would have been a typical Kirby win. So I thought I think Kirby would have gotten to the finals and then gotten beaten by Ohio State. But I thought that was one of his worst coaching jobs in a big game that I've seen. But he's the best. All right, guys, parting shots. Anything else, or are we going to wrap this round table up?
I think I'm going to call producer Scott, Brother Scott, after this preaching tonight. He was preaching it tonight,
yeah.
John. Brother Scott.
Man, I need a nap. I need a nap after that.
That's right.
No, I think we all know DeBoer's going to – I mean, we were hopeful and very confident that he's going to earn that number three with flying colors and likely end up number two or even one. If Kirby keeps eating big breakfasts and coaching like you did against Notre Dame, you know, you may be putting Kalen at the top of the heap. So roll tide next year.
Alabama's winning the whole thing next year. You heard it first.
I agree.
I'll be here for it. All right, guys, anything else?
I don't think so.
All right, well, that wraps it up for this episode of the Bamature Hour. We'll come up with another fun roundtable here soon, and I appreciate you guys being on here, and roll tide.
Roll tide.
Yeah, roll tide.
Roll tide.